I'm Christian Abbott.
I'm Nathan Lavender.
I'm Sean Abbott.
And this is the Red Mist Podcast.
Welcome to the Red Mist Podcast, season 4, episode 16. So, Christian, this one, I didn't really go to, I was going to go to the Wayback Machine on this, but I didn't want to do any NASCAR. And I had a really good NASCAR thing. But, I went with the sports car theme and went with longtime fan favorites, Dyson Racing.
Oh, yes. That's a great one.
And I this is hard because they ran two cars, number 16 and 20. So number 16, right? That was their first car they ran. So that was their iconic number. But they ran they ran the 962s, the MGs, the MGs, they ran. Oh, yeah, they ran a Crawford. I forgot about that. Then they ran... the Porsche 962s. I mean, it was wild. But I'm going to go with my car, the one I liked, or most iconic. Plus, I got to see it win the Daytona 24 Hours. The Riley and Scott Mark III. Both Series 1 and 2. With the big-ass Ford engine in the background.
All right.
So that's my pick. Could have went with the Porsches, though.
Is there a bad Dyson car to pick from?
No, and they had the Lola Coupe with the Mazda motor in it.
Yeah, the LMP1.
Right, and yeah. That Grandma thought was going to blow up. So many fantastic memories of those cars.
That was great.
Then they ran this Porsche Spiders when they had the open, the LMP2 cars. Oh, those things were awesome. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, love them. Love that team. All right. On tonight's episode, we'll talk. We're just going to call it the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix, but, it had 72,000 names.
Yeah.
So, we'll talk that. A good race?
I thought it was fine, yeah.
I thought it was entertaining.
Yeah, and, again, plenty of, actually, some post-race comments that I think are worthwhile discussing.
Oh, you'll have to fill me in on those.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk IndyCar qualifying, and we'll talk the elephant in the room. I came out from IndyCar qualifying, and then we'll have some news and notes, and we'll have our picks. Nate has texted his in from the Netherworld. Mm-hmm. So let's get to it.
Yes.
Imola. Let me just two things on this. I thought the broadcast was great. At least the F1 TV broadcast was. Mm-hmm. The other Sky broadcast must have been good because Crofty wasn't on. Get off weekend.
I didn't have the audio on when I watched the race, and when I watched the race, I woke up late, so I was just kind of skimming through.
Oh, okay.
Real quick, which actually worked out really well because I was able to skip through all of the safety cars.
Yeah, yeah. So that's it was one safety car and one virtual safety car. Yeah, so
still.
Anyways.
Yeah.
It's just.
Even more so for qualifying, I got to skip through all the red flags.
There you go. I put it on Friday. Dropping the FP1, and David Valsecki's there, and I was like, "Thank God." Yeah. And they sent him out onto the track. It's awesome.
I don't know who.
It's so much fun when he's out there. I love it.
If there's anyone doesn't like him, I'm really curious to know why.
I'd like to know why too. But Alex Jenks, because he worked with him when they were doing F2, I swear to God, he's like laughing the whole time. He knows it's like he knows what the joke is, like that we all love him. Mm-hmm. he was standing in either FP1 or FP2. He was standing in some spot where the guardrail ended, and they were like sitting there going, "I have no idea if he should have been there or not." And it got better when he did the pit walk. It was awesome. It was so much fun. I love that guy. Just the enjoyment he brings to a broadcast is, I will say this, McLaren fans have to hate him though. They must hate him. Because every broadcast he's been on, every time they go to him for his pick, he goes, "Verstappen."
I mean, he's just saying the truth.
Right? It's hilarious. Anyways, all right, enough of that. Although it was an awesome broadcast. I mean, they had Alex Brundle. They had it was just awesome. I loved it. Could have done without David Coulthard, but that's all right. Anyways, qualifying. Had the usual suspects. Except this time, Lando get aced out of the top three.
Yeah. Before we even get to that, it was surprising to see that Ferrari was really nowhere, which was a shame.
Yeah.
And that in
shambolic.
In their place was Williams.
Yep.
And also Aston Martin.
Yep.
So.
And also, the guy who probably should be the number two driver at Red Bull, Hadjar.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, it's. Well, let me take that back. Because Yuki was still ahead of Hadjar in his first couple of races this season. I'm not saying that Yuki is like, I think any of the Red Bull drivers in that second seat are screwed. I don't think it really matters.
That doesn't help when Yuki barrel rolled it in qualifying.
No, that was a, because I remember watching that and then asking you if Liam wrecked the car when he was in the Red Bull for his races, and I don't think he was.
I don't know you did.
So, I mean, I'm not that that's a reason to take Yuki out and put Liam in, but I think it's better that it was Yuki and not either of the other guys the Red Bull camp, just because he can at least take it and move forward easier, right. I would say. But
yeah, 100% agree.
Regardless, it's a lot of damage to the car. So
yep. I also like to welcome back to the paddock or to the race, Franco Colapinto, who picked up right where he left off last year. Been in a car. But hey,
yeah,
Flav's all excited about him. So,
Yeah, well, I guess my question is who's really running Alpine right now? Because it doesn't seem like it's just an endless revolving door through there, regardless. Yeah. So
that's what everybody's saying.
Yeah.
So let's Lando. Oscar took pole once again.
I like the finest nipping Max. Too. Yeah.
Yep, nipping Max. I will say this, the Red Bull in Max's hands, I can't say in Yuki's hands, because he crashed it once. So had he not crashed it, I would have probably got a better feel for where he was during the weekend. But the Red Bull looked a lot more racy overall.
Yeah, much more competitive. I think if Yuki hadn't crashed, he still would have been a second off of Max. So,
But when you crash a car, then the car is never right.
Honestly, after doing something like that, I don't know how much more confidence I have in him to go to the next round because it's Monaco. Yeah. Like that's the worst one.
Anyways, we'll get to that. All right. So race day dawns. No rain, no nothing this year. Kind of a bummer. The rain always makes it spicy.
I would say the race played out very well.
Yeah.
I thought it was, had there not been the VSC or the safety car, I think it would have been fine from a strategic standpoint because it was interesting to watch the guys that ducked into pits for tires.
Yeah. We'll get to that.
I know. I'm jumping the gun.
No, that's fine. But we have to talk. The race was won
in lap one.
Turns one and two.
Yes.
Lap one. With probably one of the most audacious and highly skilled passes I've ever seen anyone try and do. And kept it on the track.
Yeah. Piastri just got schooled on that one.
He got snookered.
So
he did. I just don't think he thought he was going to do it. And he Oscar just said he braked a tad earlier, but he didn't expect Max to brake as late as he did go around them.
Yeah. So I mean,
but that's the thing. I mean, Max is right now in Formula One. He is the late great breaker. Mm-hmm. Great late breaker. I mean, we had the chinky chicanes, but I mean, they're there because of a reason. So a couple reasons, which is all fine, but there's consequences because you can go off into, there's no pavement. You can either go off into the grass or into the gravel and really ruin your race. So,
oh yeah, Pierre learned that the hard way.
It was just, I mean, once I was over the pass, the next thing that I almost like mouth dropped was Max was over a second when they got to the start finish line.
Right. Well, and then
and he was out of then he's out of DRS.
Yes, and then I can't remember who it was, but on lap three, they did the exact same move around the outside at turn one, and it was just as jaw dropping because of how close it was.
Right.
So I mean that
was it Lando?
It might have been Lando.
Because Lando fell back a little bit because George made a demon start. George made a great start. And,
he did.
Fred was in there.
Yeah, he was awesome.
It was awesome. And Albon too. So Lando got kind of snookered there a little bit. I think it was Lando that made that pass. He did. Lando did have it screwed in this weekend. I thought, just thought in qualifying.
Yep. Yeah. No, he's.
You know.
He was there, and plus, like he's done well at this track in previous years. So.
You know, and I don't want to drone on with Max, but once Max got out in front, got in the clean air, he just pulled away. And went, and it was just a matter of when does he pit for his tires? Mm-hmm. You know. And is there going to be a significant drop off? But because he got out so far and the car was so much more compliant, he was able to manage those tires for a long time, as did Lando.
Well, I guess back up just a little bit. In qualifying, the Astons were qualifying on the medium tire.
Yes, and as did George.
Yeah, that's right. So,
oh, no, wait a minute. George did the hard tire at the end. Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
He did the hard tire at the end, and he got third out of that.
Yeah, so...
Which is impressive.
So it was clear, like, that the soft tire was not it.
Yeah.
And it was just a question of how long could you make the mediums go for, and Carlos pointed out pretty quick after his first pit stop that when he was asking for Albon's lap times, he was like, all right, well, if he's still doing those, it's clear that the one stop is the way to go. And
right. Yeah.
And for,
yeah.
For Max so at the time when Piastri pitted, he pitted into traffic. So he had the bonus of waiting a couple of laps and could eke out his tire lap advantage.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think, where the whole race turned.
Yes.
Not for Max. Max set sail and was gone. So yeah. I don't even want to talk. I'm not knocking Max. Max went on and won the race. Where the race turned for everybody else was when McLaren, for whatever reason, decides to pit Piastri.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what are you doing? And like, even the F1 TV guys was saying the same thing. Like, what are you doing? They basically put him on a two-stop race at that point.
Yeah. Well, and it was really evident after Ferrari pitted Leclerc correctly, which I think.
Yes,
not,
they did.
Not because of the VSC, but like they made a correct call.
They pitted him correctly, yeah.
Because they pitted him before the two McLarens started squabbling with one another.
Right.
Or it was them and Russell.
Because he was making inroads. He was making inroads on them.
So then as those two were battling, they backed up from second down to eighth, whatever it was. And Leclerc had pitted at the time, was in clean air, and then by the time that the back half of that top 10 pitted, he jumped them all.
Yeah.
Because he made up essentially seven seconds, whatever it was, on all of them. So
yeah,
it was.
And then
great call there. Even if they had to make another pit stop, like again, they
Well, it's when they made the other pit stop, they basically screwed them. So that was I don't know. It's just a clown show down there.
A little indecisiveness, but I mean, ultimately, the result at the end for Ferrari was a great recovery.
Better than expected.
Yeah.
Yeah, better than expected. So, I will say this, my driver of the race, I really think Hadjar should be the driver, or Hadjar or Albon should be driver of the race. But, I mean, I know Hadjar finished ninth, but I'm just saying over the weekend, he did a great job. I'm going to give it to Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah.
He pulled that tractor up to fourth place.
Mm-hmm.
So, congrats on him on his first Ferrari home race. Won't call it his home race because that's Silverstone. Mm-hmm. So, I thought he did a great job. I mean, I think Lando was right when he came on the radio, and I haven't seen people. You know, I'm sure there are people griping about it, but when he said, "Hey, I'm on new, he's on used. If we're gonna try and catch him," you know.
Yeah, when I was watching the TV, the race, I didn't have the volume on, so
you might have missed that.
I missed the call for that, but that was
definitely
the one thing I was thinking.
I don't know if there was a call because Lando took him going down the straight pretty easily.
He did, but like this is where McLaren is.
They let it go. If
they're going to lose the driver's title, it's going to be races like this.
Yeah,
and they're not putting whichever driver at the moment to get the win for them in the best position, that they're messing around and they're just letting them kind of do whatever instead of just making the hard call and being like, we're sorry, Oscar, but Lando has the best shot to win. Yeah. You're going to be in third.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I think that's, I exactly feel the same way. When the two McLarens are out in front and controlling the race, it's, I get it.
Right.
But when they're behind, they have no concept of what, they're going to, right now, they're letting them hang around. Now, if this Red Bull has gotten somewhat better, okay, meaning the car overall, we know what Max can do with a crap car. If it got any bit better, he can pull it up. Now, the other thing is, and you know, we'll talk about this. Well, let's just finish the race and then we can talk about this. You know, it was a relatively clean race. We had two engine failures, one to the Haas of Ocon, and the other to Kimi. Just a bad weekend, unfortunately for him.
Yeah, it was too bad.
It just wasn't his weekend. Also, overall for Mercedes, it wasn't a good weekend. I mean, I know George, you know, got third in qualifying, but he was out to lunch in the race, and he was complaining about something in the rear end of the car. So, not 100% certain if they ever came back with something there.
Yeah, it just didn't work out.
You know, I mean, Albon finishing fifth and Carlos finishing eighth. Another great points day for Williams. Leclerc picked up sixth, Hazard ninth, and Yuki 10th, with Fred finishing just out of the thing. And somebody who just kind of hung around all weekend was Hulkenberg, finished 12th.
Yeah. To Yuki's credit, that's a really good recovery there to
Yeah, it was, considering he started from the pit lane. Yeah, so good for him. All right, so now is I think the gap in the points lead came down, so, you know, quite a bit. Well, a bit, but Max is now at 22 points. Okay, so and we talked about this a little bit, but let's talk about it now. Let's go to Monaco. It's not much. The Sunday race is not much of a race, right?
Right.
So it all comes down to what happens on Saturday.
Yep.
So Max has a pretty good record of qualifying there, and he's not afraid of the barriers, huh?
I said, no, really.
So, and he's not, I mean, not, when I say not afraid of the barrier, it's not like he's clouding the barriers. He knows where to put the car, mm-hmm. like millimeters, to get the fastest, get the most out of it. Because there's been super slow-mos of him just putting the wheel right against the barrier. I mean, it's amazing. So if Max goes, let's just say Max goes, the car's better right now, but let's just say Max goes out, gets pole. I think the only thing that could trip it up is if it rains this weekend, which I don't think it's expected to.
We gotta check. No.
I'll let you. No, no rain. So if Max goes ahead, puts this on pole, makes an his average start down to, he's going to have the controlling position down into Sandoval, the first corner and the chicane. At that point, he's out in clean air again, and he should, in theory, start pulling away. There's very few DRS spots for that on that track. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any opportunity for anyone to undercut anybody on this track. I you could prove me wrong in this. I just don't think so.
No,
maybe somebody in the back of the pack, mid pack, but as soon as you're constantly in traffic there.
Yeah. I
think the only way you can do it is you got to pit like within two laps so that when you pit everybody goes by, and then you got like 5 or 6 laps of clean air to kind of filter back in. But then you got to try and pick through the people and hope that they're pitting so that you can go up. And I just don't know. And then if you get a yellow flag, you're screwed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so you definitely want to go as long as you can.
So McLaren has definitely painted themselves into a box here for this week, for 2 races in a row here.
Yeah.
Potentially. I expect when we go to Barcelona, I expect the McLaren to be fast there. I don't know what the Red Bull will do, because it's kind of the McLaren's dominated in preseason testing there. So, they're just on that type of track. They're just very quick. I just don't, maybe the Red Bull has, but I mean, right now they've kind of painted themselves into a box for 2 races potentially.
Yeah. I mean, Barcelona will be kind of, it's 50-50 on how that goes, because it's a very high speed track where historically that's what the strength of the Red Bull has been, is cornering. But
yeah,
at the same token, like the car just hasn't had it this year. So unless whatever upgrade that they brought for last week translates, then good. Or if they have another one coming, then great. But I would say anything low speed right now is their friend. And
yep.
Monaco for sure is just that.
Yeah.
So
gotcha. All right. So we go off to Monaco next. Just real quick, just on the top 3, because there's about a 30, there's a 25 point gap between Max and George for between 4th and 3rd, which I expect is probably going to stay right at that, because unless something happens to Max in a race or Lando or Oscar, I don't see George sneaking, being able to take on those 3. So Oscar's out front, 146. Lando's brought it down to 13 points, so he's at 133. Max is 9 behind Lando now.
Yeah.
So he's 22. So he's still in touch. The number of races left to go.
Yeah, there's plenty of races to go. And like, this is the perfect time to... I shouldn't say the perfect time, but like, any of like the questions around the first couple of races of the season, you're like, all right, well, who really stacks where? And now you definitely have a picture of McLaren has the car.
Yep.
If anyone is going to fumble it, it's going to be McLaren.
McLaren. Yep.
And I mean, one of 2 things: either Max is going to just keep finding the operating window for that car.
Yeah.
To put it up there to take down the McLarens, or Ferrari or Mercedes in the next few races have to find something to then go challenge and start taking points away from the top.
No, agree.
So, and it, again, like if the car performance just flips completely and McLaren becomes, say, the third quickest car, you're only talking 5th and 6th place points for them. And Oscar racked up 4 wins and has the lead that he does. But again, put those 4 wins, say, for Lewis at sometime later on in the season, like that, it's completely shaken up and evened out a little bit.
Yeah.
So there's still plenty of the season left to go. I mean,
that's true.
7 races in of 24. So almost a third of the way in. Monaco, a third of the way. Yeah.
All right. That wraps up our Formula One coverage. Mm-hmm. All right, let's turn our attentions to the Brickyard and qualifications for the 109th Indianapolis 500.
Mm-hmm.
The week leading up to it, it was eventful for a couple teams.
I would say it was eventful for the whole paddock grid. Yeah. Just because it seemed like everyone was struggling with that extra 100
points. It was unfortunate. We had the crash with both Armstrong and Herder. Mm-hmm. Those are two quality cars that once they crashed, they had to go to the backup car, and the backup car is never the same, you know.
No.
And the interesting thing with IndyCar is I don't know if it's, I think it's just for the 500, or I'm not sure if it's throughout the season. It might be actually, because Schwartzman's fallen afraid of this. You're not allowed to bring a fully built backup car. You have to rebuild. You gotta, build it.
Yeah, I
didn't know that.
I wonder what the rules classify as a fully built car, what is a unfinished car technically.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Yeah, but every car seems to be at least, a lot of work. Anyways.
Yeah.
So, we had that. We had a bit of drama with the Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan guys, all except one. We'll get to him in a little while. But the full season guys were just struggling. Mm-hmm. The other guys that were definitely struggling, unfortunately, were the Dale Coyne guys, who have shown pretty good pace throughout the year. Just whatever it was, just was not, leading into qualifying, just not weren't quick, Mm-hmm. So, the usual suspects rose to the top, except for two. One, who I'm not surprised rose to the top, but I am surprised because the team struggled, was Taku.
Yeah.
And he's coming back to the Speedway after, basically destroying his primary car in the test, having the team have to rebuild the car in the 3 weeks preceding this running. Car shows up, they unload, Taku goes through his program, he gets to Thursday, and then he starts putting it, and then he starts ramping it up. I mean, so, what I don't get is, as he was getting quicker all weekend, why the rest of the Ray Hall guys weren't going to his setup? Unless he does something that is just so, those guys just can't deal with it. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I can think of. Maybe he just runs no downforce. I don't know. Taku was definitely probably the bravest guy ever. One of the bravest guys I've seen drive a race car.
He's
full send.
Yeah. Yeah. He's full send. On the line. He's making.
He's full send. He's full send, and he is probably one of the nicest human beings in the world. But man, he gets behind the wheel. It's like, look out. Holy crap. And then out of nowhere, I mean, I'm going to be blatantly honest, Robert Schwartzman. Who saw this?
Well, I just, Prema alone. I mean, really?
Yeah.
I did not.
I mean, I figured where Eilat was, he was kind of in that low teen to early 20 bucket. I thought mm-hmm. that's where they were going to be.
Yeah. And which, again, would have been great. Because
I figured Eilat would be there, and then Schwartzman would be just behind him, right? Mm-hmm. But Schwartzman, whatever he is, took like a fish to water, man.
Yeah,
he took to it. God love him. God love the crew. I mean, they did a great job. So, congrats to them. Went into Saturday qualifying. Go for the fast 12, right? For Saturday, mm-hmm. fast 12. So we get the fast 12, and just trying to find the fast 12 here. Yeah, no, this doesn't have it because something happened. His qualifications day one. Okay, so at the end of day one, your top 12. Let's just focus on them. Was Blow, McLaughlin, Newgarden, Award, Dixon. No surprises there. Only one that was outside of that that might have been a surprise was Power. He was down 10th. At 6 was Schwartzman. Now, he went out early, and he set a time where he was actually sitting on top for a long period of time until these guys, the heavy hitters, started coming. And then he fell back down, but he fell to 6. That's how good of a time he would have.
Yeah.
Then we had Malukas. Rosenquist, Taku, Power, Erickson, and Lundgaard. That was your top 12. Folks that were in deep trouble at this point were in 31st with Marco, Rinus VK, Marcus Armstrong, and Jacob Abel. Herta got in at 29th after a complete rebuild on his car. So that was great. Mm-hmm. And then, props to Dreyer Reinbold at 27th, 28th. I know that sounds funny, 27th, 28th, but these guys show up one race. That's their car. Basically, their first priority is to make the race. Now it's to go for the win. That's how they look at it. So we'll see what happens with them. So I thought that was interesting. So now we move to Sunday, to our top 12. And this is where the drama came. We couldn't even get to put the first car on track, and three Penske cars were in trouble. McLaughlin crashed early on Sunday morning in practice, put it up on its roof, and basically there was no time to rebuild the car. So worst case, he was going to start 12th because he did qualify with the fastest 12th time. So by rule, that's where he starts. You can say you hate that or not. That's fine. However, shortly after cars started lining up on the pit lane, the other two Penske cars were pulled and then subsequently disqualified from top 12 qualifying. And the reason for it is where the attenuator attaches. So the attenuator runs off the back. That's the piece, that sticks out from the wing and goes into the chassis. So the wing actually does sit on the attenuator, but it's more so there's a piece out back that helps. If there's a crash, it's like a crash component that hits first. So it kind of takes the impact away from, gearbox and engine and stuff. That piece is all one piece. That then bolts into the chassis. And when it bolts in, there's a ridge where the two meet. It's not a smooth seam or anything like that. It's like a jigsaw puzzle. There's a little bit of a divot, stuff like that. That's the way the car's built. And the rule is you're not allowed to touch that area. Well, Team Penske touched that area and had basically filled in the gap and smoothed it out. And it was pretty telltale. I don't know. Somebody tipped them off. Somebody tipped somebody off, because this all happened like literally as the cars were rolling through inspection. Power's car went through and went down to the pit lane. And then I think they got tipped off. Somebody tipped somebody off on the technical crew down there and pointed it out. They were told that two things could happen. They could pull the car out of line, or they would be allowed to qualify, and then subsequently the time would be DQ'd and the car would go back to, 11th or 10th, because Levin Gawkin was locked in at 12th at the time. Mm-hmm. Then Newgarden's car was in tech, and when they found this out, this is when it all found out, because the folks that were down in the pit lane came from IndyCar came running up and into the tech area and started looking at the back, and they pointed it out to the Penske guys, and they were like, that's illegal and the car's not running. And so they were like, what? And then there was like, there's video of this. There was a fan that actually has video of they were taping Award's car getting teched. Newgarden's car was on the pad, and they just stayed with it, and they were just filming away. And all of a sudden, you could see this going on. So that So now you got both, all three Penske cars are out of the top, and now we're down to the Fast Nine, essentially. And this is where it went. It, you know, we went from the Fast Nine to the Fast Six. And in that six, we had Palou, Rosenquist, Dixon, Award, Sato, and Schwartzman. Now, if you look at that six, where do you think Schwartzman's going to qualify? Probably sixth, right?
Yeah.
You know, fifth or sixth, right? Just based on experience. That's all I'm saying. No. Kid goes out there and lights it up and hangs on. That's after Taco took pole. And then, you know, Taco took pole. And then everybody threw their shots and they couldn't come through. And now you got Schwartzman, Taco, Pato on the front row, Dixon, Rosenquist, and Palou on the second row. It's frightening that the two Ganassi guys are in the second row. That's what's frightening. I mean, Taco's gonna go and run for the fence. That's what he's gonna. And when I say run for the fence, I mean he is literally gonna just as he'll stay storming. That's when he says he's going fast. He's storming. He's just gonna try and get the lead and go, because I don't think he can. It's gonna be, you know, the car runs out of gas or it breaks. That's you know, that's how it is. And if he gets his third win out of this, I'm gonna be just hats off to him.
Yeah.
You know, Award, again, another great qualifying, but, you know, the track record with his team is horrendous. You know, I hope not, but I feel like his team's going to let him down somehow. So, you know, just amazing that, you know, Schwartzman got the pole. I mean, it's an awesome story. It's a great story. It's what makes the Indy 500 a great race, because the qualifying isn't one lap, it's four laps. You know? And you got to put it together for four laps. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it's always this is probably my favorite qualifying.
Yes.
Well, actually, I think the Triple Crown races in motorsports are my favorite.
And oh, yeah.
Le Mans, Indy, and Monaco.
When we get, yeah, well, Le Mans, when we get to the quality day, and we go first the first round, and then we get all the way through the Hyperpole. Oh.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's...
It's nuts. You're right. The other one I really enjoy, I enjoy IMSA qualifying.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like...
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
In general, like, you know, like, some... It's always exciting watching a qualifying session, and I mean, when... Really, in any qualifying session where you have guys that are swapping laps back and forth, and it's coming down really close, it's always great. But if you had to sit on the grid and be... or on pit lane, whatever, and before you go out for a qualifying session, like, there's some that just hold that much more than others, and the Indy is top three right there. And it like, for me, I guess you can put any of them in whichever order you'd want to put them in. But, like, it's so different to everything else, and also the fact that this is one of the few series that still bumps people out. And I know everyone's like, well, it's just 34 cars. Like, why not let the one car in? It's like, well, but this is the way it is. And I mean, it's not that it makes or breaks the race, but it makes or breaks that team and that car.
Yeah.
That doesn't make the field. I mean, even the, what was it, Pacific? The Dinner with Racers episode that they did on the one team that didn't qualify.
I forget the pack. It was Mario Dominguez's car.
Yeah. It was really interesting hearing a story from the losing side. and all the ramifications of it and what people go through to do what they do to make the race. And so, I mean, like, that's the side of racing you don't hear about a lot. Everyone loves the winner or everything like that.
Right.
No one hears the other side of the sport that exists.
Right.
Because, unfortunately, that those people aren't the ones on TV to share their story.
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
But that's... When you understand those perspectives of it, that's why it's so important. And just and yeah, no one really remembers, you know, who got bumped at or didn't make the race. Unless, you know, you have some kind of personal connection to it. But it's also because sometimes you don't hear from those drivers again. Or teams, whichever way.
Yeah. I mean, but we almost had the greatest upset at Indy. Well, we had two, I thought.
Actually,
one was Alexander Rossi winning on no fuel.
Yep.
The other one that almost that didn't happen, that came down to the last corner, was J.R. Hildebrand.
Yeah.
I mean, just think, if he won that race, his whole career would have turned.
Right.
Completely and, around.
Same could be said with...
And he's a great. He's a very good race car driver.
Yeah.
But after that, it was like, oh. I'm sorry. You were gonna say?
Well, I was gonna be said. I was gonna say same thing could have been said for anyone that's finished second at the Indy 500.
Nathan.
But actually, I just remembered that there is one name that's memorable that got bumped is Fernando Alonso.
Yes.
He didn't make it. So again, it's stuff like that where, you know.
Yeah, and this year it came down to a teammate bumping a teammate.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to have that happen, but that sucks. But anyways, so, well, all right. You know, so that, I again, it was a fantastic 2 days of quality. I'm not a big fan of the, you know, but I'm sort of getting used to it now. So I guess I'm liking it. I, you know, I'm kind of all for the, you know, dial it up and everybody goes for it. I hate going from 12 to 6. Sometimes it just frustrates me. It's just a way to drag it out, but it's TV ratings more than anything. It just, for me, it just seems like it increases the odds of something happening, you know, to a team that's been there all week. And Kyle Larson pointed this out. He goes, like, oh, you're doing really well in qualifying. I hate this. Because every time I go out, I'm putting the car right on the edge and I could, you know, crash it. And he had a couple where he got away with it. But he's right, you know. It's tough, you know. So.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Well, should we? The only big news item right now that I have, well, outside of this whole Penske thing, I mean,
okay,
this has just gone on to the point where now, you know, obviously some of the teams are like, well, they should have went to the back of the pack, and then it's like, what about Jacob Abel who showed up with a, you know, so that all has to get that's for, you know, the sanctioning body to figure out. So I'm not going to figure it out.
I guess my only take on this is this weekend, of course, is odd because you find it on qualifying day two, but not qualifying day one.
Yeah, on day one. And so, that's what a lot of people are sitting there going, you know, they're all going, hey, Pinocchio, you know, that's what they're all saying. So,
yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of people, and there's been a lot of sleuthing around. People have gone to the Indy Museum where Joseph's car from last year is, and sure enough, the attenuator is smooth finished to the chassis.
Okay, so this is my thing about trying to figure out how long this was going on for.
Yeah.
I don't care how long it's been going on for.
Yeah.
Because if it's... let me rephrase this. It's interesting to see how long it's been going on for. I don't consider it cheating because up until this weekend, this one weekend, they never got caught before.
Got caught, right.
And
no, I
so,
agree.
So to me, I'm more impressed that Penske just did it, and that's good for them. They got away with it. And,
when we say Penske, we talk the team. We're not – Roger Penske didn't do this.
But
the team did this.
But like
but this is a team let's just call a spade a spade. They're the ones in NASCAR had their driver with a web glove directing wind into the car.
Right.
Okay? And they got called on it. They've also got caught having an illegal push-to-pass software.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of just, went, well, I don't know, it was by accident. You know, everything is a friggin' excuse. This is what it's like, own up to it.
Yeah.
And that's my only thing. It's like, we got caught. All right. We thought we could do this and we got caught. All right. That's fine. I have more respect for you when you do that. But when you start with the cover-up stories, and then the person I'm really starting to get annoyed with this whole thing, is I'm starting to get annoyed with Newgarden. And the only reason is, and I'm not doubting his driving talents and stuff, but the way he just fluffs this off, like, it's no big deal. It's like, dude, your car has been overly optimized to the point where it's cheating. Getting to the Penske unfair advantage. Okay. The unfair advantage in the world of Penske is when they showed up with the Mercedes motor, which was this outrageous stock block motor that, but the next year got outlawed, but it was in the rules and they could do it and they did it. They've done other things in the rules. They've pushed the rules to the limit, but they haven't been outside the rules. The 917-30 that they built for the Can-Am series thing was 1300 horsepower. I mean, it was a rocket ship. Mm-hmm. All that stuff, like acid dipping chassis back in the day for Trans Am and NASCAR, it was all allowed. Now you can't do it. It never said in the book you couldn't do it. But this one on the attenuator, it does in the rules say that you can't modify that area of the car.
Right. I'm not
so. But I give you. I get back to your point, and I agree with you there.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's try it. And if we get away with it, and they keep getting away with it, well, then what's, and that's where the piece is. People in tech are going, well, they're employed by Penske, so they're just kind of looking the other way. Whereas that's where they want this, to be a little more transparent in terms of people, that are working there in the tech area. And not that they're not challenging the tech people, but they need a person above them that's not Penske. And the person that got, I think, just absolutely snowballed with this whole thing was Doug Bowles. I mean, he's the head of IndyCar, but he's also the head of IMS. I mean, this guy, this is the one event where he's probably like, I don't really want to be head of IndyCar here. This is my baby. Yeah. And he's the guy that runs that place. I mean, and he puts on a show and a half. The guy is out there greeting fans. He's doing everything. He's accessible to the media, everything. And he looked yesterday when I watched the press conference, and he said it, I didn't sleep. He was up all night.
Mm-hmm.
Because initially it's like, well, we're going to go to the top 12. But the blowback he started getting was, and I'm sure it was fans, other team owners, stuff like that. And then he's like, well, now I'm calling this race into the race that I've kind of built, that we all built, that we all cherish, is being, kind of. So he said the hardest thing to do is move in the back of the pack. I agree. I mean, I think Penske's team, I think the Penske team needs to just take a big self look at itself. And that goes for the guys, everybody on the team, drivers, crew, strategists, everybody, and just go, look, you guys, you got to, it really is starting to, it's just starting to look bad optics.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing. I guess someone to just kind of echo the point. I don't mind the ingenuity.
Or innovative thinking.
Either. Like you have.
You do it
if you're not trying to cheat. You're not trying to win. Like
you're not trying to win, right?
You do have to like push the rule books to an extent, because if you're not doing it, someone else is, and you're at an inherent disadvantage just because you're not trying.
Right, in the world of motorsports, when they're saying that, what they really mean is they're trying to optimize the car within the rules. And you know, anybody who's anybody will tell you, yeah, we tried to do. You try and take advantage of something, you know?
Right. And that's,
if you're not trying, you're right, Christian, you're not trying to win.
Yeah.
You're right.
And that's the, it's the one gray area, the one gray area of racing that will always exist is interpretation of the rules.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you write something that someone else interprets differently, then you need to rewrite the rule or clarify it even more.
Yeah,
because you left ambiguity in there. You cannot leave ambiguous things out there.
Ambiguous things,
For people to play around with, because then it's always going to be the box that everyone goes and tries to maximize. That's what that's what NASCAR has become.
They do it in NASCAR. And they're playing with everything to get those bodies like, you know, perfect and stuff. I mean, and that wasn't the purpose of this Gen 7 car. It was basically just a cost saving things, but these guys are spending so much money on this other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, to, you know, shape the body so it still fits the template, but there's you know, it's crazy.
I don't mind teams doing this stuff, but to your point with Penske, where it's like, when you really think back about it, it's like, all right, incident this time, another incident last year, another incident before.
Right.
You're trying to do it, but you're doing it really bad that you're getting caught a lot.
Right.
Like the piece that really is,
you know, it makes it look bad is obviously, you know, we've had a couple, you know, issues with them. But, you know, their team owner owns the series.
Yeah.
He also owns the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The last thing you want to be doing is cheating, you know, is cutting corners in your own series because it doesn't look good. Mm-hmm. You know? So, anyways, you know, more to come on this, I'm sure, as people find stuff out. You know, I don't know. If Newgardner Power had gotten pole and it comes out, then they find out the car's like out of spec. I mean, I think it'd be even a bigger black eye.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say this, even if one of those three wins the race this weekend, it's not going to be popular.
No. I think especially if Newgarden wins it, especially three times in a row, because it'll be like, well,
yeah,
there's too much surrounding it. And yeah, would it be cool for him to win three times in a row? Sure. But I mean, not just him, but anyone for that matter. But obviously, because it's never been done before. But it's going to come with a dark cloud hanging over it. And that's not how you want to do it.
Right.
So.
All right. Well, let's leave it there. We look forward to the race. Just one news item that I have. Wayne Taylor Racing unveiled their livery for Le Mans, mm-hmm. for their Cadillac, with Mobile One sponsorship. It looks very sharp.
Yes.
I don't know if you've seen pictures of it, but fantastic looking car.
Yeah.
That's pretty much all I have on that. The only other thing, and it is NASCAR related, Jimmy Johnson returns to action this weekend. And it's his 700th career start.
All right.
So congrats to him.
Yeah.
All right. And that's in the World, is it the Coca-Cola 600? I don't know. Yeah, it's the Coca-Cola 600. It used to be the World 600.
Yeah.
But anyway. So, and I'm going to just, you know, best wishes to Kyle Larson this weekend as he tries to complete the double.
I just hope he can get the whole race, both distances.
I want him to finish the 500 and I want him to finish the 600. That's what I want him to do. It's a feat. It's awesome. I it's throwback. It's awesome. So, hopefully, and if Kyle has a decent finish, top 10 finish, that'd be even better, mm-hmm. at the 500. All right. Okay, now this is our big weekend of picks, though.
Yep.
All right. So are we for Monaco? We're picking the top three, right?
Yeah, top three dark horse as usual.
Dark horse. Indy, we're just picking winner and a dark horse, right?
Yeah, I can't remember.
I don't want to pick. I don't think we picked the top three.
I can double check. Maybe the last
year,
real quick.
Yeah, I don't want to. I hate doing the top three, but it's such a wild card race.
It is. No, last year we did do three picks for the win.
We just did the winner?
No, we did three picks for the winner and a dark horse, so I guess four.
Oh, and then we just took the best. All right. Okay. And then NASCAR, we just picked. Did we pick for NASCAR last year?
No. No, we never do NASCAR picks.
We don't. No. Even okay. All right. Okay.
No.
All right. All right. Nate, I know Nate filed his picks.
He did.
So let's have it, Christian.
Yep. So we're doing IndyCar?
Let's do Indy first.
All right. Nate's taking Scotty Mack, Alex Palou, and Pato Award as his as one of the three to win it. And then his fourth, but being the dark horse of these picks, is Connor Daly.
Okay. All right. I can go. I would like to go.
Alrighty.
I am going to go, hello, hello! I'm going to go Dixon. And I'm going to go Taku.
Hello.
You know, I'm surprised Nate didn't pick Castro Neves.
Taku. And who's your dark horse?
My dark horse is going to be Alexander Rossi.
All right. Fair enough.
Because I think Daly and Rossi, I think that those are two good dark horses.
I need the graphic of the starting grid because. I am going to go. Dixon.
Ooh, I like it.
Malukas.
Oh.
And Rosenquist.
Oh, that's a good one. Wow, that's some good picks there.
And then,
all right, that's good.
My dark horse, because no one's touched it, I'm going to go Schwartzman, because I can't.
Okay, no,
I can't ignore the Pullman.
No, no, like, no. He, even though he's on pole, he is a dark horse.
Yeah.
I 100% agree with you there. I mean, actually, could I even say that about Taku? But I'm just going based on experience there. I'm just surprised Nate didn't go with Helio, because he's such a Helio fan, boy.
Yeah.
I mean, he was going to pick him to win the Daytona 500 this year.
I know. If Pato wins it this year, good for him.
Obviously. I don't trust McLaren. That's my whole thing.
Well, I just. Either
Pato. They always bone him somehow. That's how I look at it.
Either Pato gets over the hump and wins one, or.
Or he never will. Or Herta does.
He's always going to be the new Scott Goodyear of just finishing second.
Yeah. Or Herta wins it from deep in the field. Which wouldn't shock me.
No. I mean, I'm kind of interested to see the progress of the Penske's through the back. I think that'll just be something interesting to watch. I mean, same thing with Herta, but I mean,
I'm just staying off the Penske train. I mean, Scotty Mack's probably the only one that could win it, because every time so far out of all the crap that's happened, his car's been legit. So yeah. I don't know what that's all about, but anyways, which makes it even more so. That's why I get more burned about Newgarden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so anyways.
Alrighty.
All right, let's go to Monaco.
Oh God. Where's his picks? All right, Nate's got Max, Oscar, and Lando. And his dark horse is Signs.
Carlos.
I'm going to go Alonso, Max, and Signs on my vote.
You're picking Alonso to win?
I'm picking him to win because Aston showed up last week.
You know, speaking of Aston, you know who's showing up in the paddock this weekend?
Oh, is it Dewey?
Yeah.
Nice. That'll be why. That'll be why. I want Alonso to win his 33rd. Like, and I think that this is his best race to do it. Just because it's putting some of the performance of the car to the side. Like it can be more about driver, and it's
right.
Everyone forgets, like, last year he was on provisional pole until Max took it away.
Right.
So it's only been a year, and if Aston Martin somehow figured something between Miami and Imola, it might be something. So they just got screwed last week with the strategy and the safety cars. So
so what are we down to? My pick now?
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna go Max.
Okay.
I'm gonna go. Lando. And then I am gonna go. Carlos.
Alrighty.
My dark horse? I'm gonna go Gasly as my dark horse.
Not bad.
Viva la France.
Oui. Alrighty.
All right.
Big weekend in motorsports.
Big weekend.
Indy 500, or start the day off with the Monaco Grand Prix or the British Grand Prix for the MotoGP. And then we'll kick into the Indy 500 and finish the day off with the Coke 600. I think it is.
Yeah, well,
World 600, yeah, whatever you want to call it.
I'll be exhausted miles by the Charlotte. By the time that green flag goes, I'll be exhausted.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No worries.
All right.
Everyone enjoy your Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least here. Everyone in the
enjoy. Yep. Hopefully your weather will be nice. Unlike here in the Northeast, it is going to be crap. So. And on that note.
Good night. Thank you guys for listening to the Redness Podcast, hosted by Christian Abbott, Sean Abbott, and Nathan Lavin. It's produced by Christian Abbott, and music is by Alex Wart and Harrison Tate.